everyone, and welcome to another episode of the CDH Conversations podcast. I am Roxanne Bain, a professional support lawyer in the corporate and commercial practice at CDH. Today, we are joined by Yaniv Kleitman. He is a director and counsel in the corporate and commercial department. He specializes in M&A, company law, corporate governance, and securities law. So let's get right into it. In response to South Africa's grey listing, the General Laws Anti-Money Laundering and Combating Terrorist Financing Amendment Act amended the Companies Act to provide for a beneficial ownership disclosure regime. The company's regulations were also amended to cater for this beneficial ownership disclosure regime. So Yaniv, in short, what is a beneficial owner?
Rox, in terms of the definition in the Companies Act for beneficial owner, what you're looking for is an individual, so that's a natural person or a warm body, who directly or indirectly ultimately owns or has effective control over a company. And I think we'll return to some of those aspects and we'll delve into them deeper later in the session. But that's your sort of broad test for who is a beneficial owner. It's a natural person who directly or indirectly controls or owns the company. And then the definition goes on to provide a list. We're not too sure at the moment whether it's an exhaustive list or a non-exhaustive list at this stage, but it lists various examples of how you could exercise such ownership or effective control. For instance, you could hold a shareholding in the company, direct or indirect shareholding, or you could control the voting rights contractually, for instance, by way of a voting pool or otherwise, or maybe you have some contractual ability to appoint directors to the company, or that ownership could be through a chain of ownership, or you could just have the ability to influence materially the policy of the company. And I think just two observations to be made at the outset, just so that everyone understands, in our legislation, in our Companies Act, we don't have a prescribed percentage. Okay, that's the one issue, is there's no percentage threshold that is set for this ownership to arise or for this effective control to arise. So the Companies Act doesn't say if you hold 20% or 25% or 51% that you are then a beneficial owner. So one mustn't get confused about that, because in terms of FICA, there's a guideline that is published on that recently and that sets it at 5%, but that is for purposes of FICA. And then you find in other jurisdictions around the world, they set it at 20% or 25%. We don't have that. At least that's not written into our Companies Act. And then also a difficulty with the definition is, and I think it's a bit of a loophole, is they don't have an aggregation of interests there. It seems you're only looking for an individual who can exercise that control, not an individual together with the spouse or with other family members or with someone that is acting in concert with you through a voting pool arrangement. So I think those are just some high-level observations around it and some difficulties with that definition.
Yeah, I think those are two important points to keep in mind. We'll definitely chat about the percentage issue and the aggregation issue as well. So just very briefly, who is required to disclose their beneficial owners to CIPC?
At the outset also, they've introduced two concepts there that you must bear in mind, is the affected company and the non-affected company. Okay, so it's actually your non-affected companies that have to disclose the beneficial owner. Just to take a few steps back there, one must then understand what is an affected company. So an affected company is any regulated company for purposes of takeover law. All public companies, all state-owned companies are affected companies. And then private companies, well, this is currently the test. There's going to be an overhaul of this test quite substantially in terms of the Companies Amendment Act. But currently the test is that very strange definition we have for a private company that has had a transfer of more than 10% of its voting securities in the past 24 months amongst unrelated persons. Okay, so it's got nothing to do with the size of the company or the number of shareholders. So we know that's a regulated company for purposes of takeover law, if it's a private company. And then any subsidiaries of regulated companies are regarded as affected companies. Now, with the Companies Amendment Bill, that'll change. They will make it any company that has 10 or more direct or indirect shareholders, and it will have to meet a certain financial thresholds that will be prescribed in terms of the regulations. So anything outside of that, all private companies that are not affected companies are non-affected companies, essentially. And it's those non-affected companies that have to disclose the beneficial owner. We'll probably get to this later on. Affected companies, they have their own regime around the beneficial interest.
Yes, absolutely. Just to pick up on that, you know, affected companies do have obligations. They are required to submit their securities registers to CIPC with their annual returns. And practically, this is done through CIPC's beneficial ownership portal, even though you're not technically disclosing beneficial ownership. So everyone should just be aware of the fact that, you know, you're not disclosing your beneficial ownership per se, but you're still using that portal from a practical perspective. So speaking about affected versus non-affected and the different obligations, I think at this point, it's probably worth distinguishing between a beneficial owner and a beneficial interest holder. So could you talk us through that?
There are marginal areas of overlap between the concepts, but beneficial owners, as we've discussed, it's going to be a natural person who ultimately controls that company. The holding of a beneficial interest is actually something a bit narrower, okay? That also has a definition in Section 1 of the Companies Act, and it's someone who has the ability to either exercise the voting rights attaching to shares or has the ability to control that or cause the exercise of the voting rights on those shares to be exercised, or has a right to participate in the dividends paid on those shares, or has a right to direct the disposal of those shares. So if we look at typical examples, the examples that would strike you immediately is obviously a nominee type of relationship where you have a nominee company or an asset manager with a non-discretionary mandate. They are the registered shareholder, but standing behind that nominee is the person who actually calls the shots and is actually entitled to the economic benefits of that share and can actually direct the disposal of that share. They have that contractual right vis-a-vis the nominee. So that's a clear example of a beneficial interest holder. Or perhaps you as the registered shareholder have ceded your voting rights in terms of a financing or some other arrangement. So that's also a holder of a beneficial interest. There are some deeming provisions in Section 56 around who is deemed to be a beneficial interest holder, but that's only for public companies. So that's a further area that complicates this whole discussion. So for instance, they say if you're married in community of property to your spouse and you hold the shares in a public company, then your spouse is deemed to hold a beneficial interest in that share. And there are other examples given in Section 56, but it's only for public companies. And for affected companies, they have to maintain a register of their beneficial interest holders, and they have to have a register of anyone who holds 5% or more of a beneficial interest. And so one must just keep those regimes clear and separate in your mind. There's the beneficial owners for the non-affected companies and your holders of a 5% beneficial interest for your affected companies.
Yeah, so the 5%, we need to keep that in mind as it's going to become relevant in the context of CIPC's understanding of beneficial ownership. But going back to beneficial ownership, you say it speaks to ownership or effective control. What does it mean to own or exercise effective control of a company?
Yeah, well, those terms are not defined. So maybe we can start first of all with this concept that they've introduced. I don't know where they got it from, but of owning a company. What does that actually mean? We don't really have this concept of owning a company or another juristic person, at least not from a legal technical sense. We often use that phrase in a colloquial setting. If you're at a dinner party and you ask someone, well, what do you do? And they say, oh, I own this company or I own this business. And what does that tell you? Or what picture do you have in your mind? It's probably that that person holds 100% of the shares in that company, or at least 51%. That's probably what you would understand of owning a company. I actually researched that phrase to see, has any case interpreted owning a company, or is it used in any other statute or other legal instrument? And there's nothing on that. So it is a rather peculiar turn of phrase that they've used there of owning a company. So I think that remains a bit of an open area. Then in terms of effective control, they don't have a definition of that either. And it's not the definition in terms of Section 2 and 3, which is used for relatedness amongst parties. That's a particular technical definition used in those sections. So it just seems to be this effective control in the general sense. How do you understand that? And it's well established, at least in the common law, that you control a company when you're the majoritarian shareholder. You hold 50% plus one of the shares or have some form of control akin to that, or that is similar to that. So that's probably your very rudimentary and basic starting point, is to look at is there a majoritarian shareholder in this company? And we're talking about, you know, forget for the time being, bespoke provisions in the MOI or shareholders agreement that, that give you control as a non-majoritarian shareholder. So you look at, is there a majority shareholder? If that shareholder is not a natural person, let's say it's a company or it's a juristic person, then you've got to trace up that chain, up that leg of control to see, can you ultimately pinpoint a natural person that controls that chain? And then they are obviously the beneficial owner. So that would be a sort of working starting point in understanding and identifying who is the beneficial owner of this company.
Yeah, so it's interesting because we talk about, you know, the majoritarian shareholder and so on, but CIPC has imposed this rule in their communications that beneficial owners of 5% or more must be disclosed. And that doesn't seem to align with this concept of control that you've been explaining.
Yeah, right from the beginning, the CIPC did send out a lot of communiques on this. And it's, you know, you do see this in a lot of documents and communications from the CIPC. With respect, I do think it's a conflation of principles. Nowhere in the Companies Act does it say that someone who holds 5% or greater beneficial interest in the securities of a company is therefore a beneficial owner. Those are separate concepts that apply to affected and non-affected companies. So that is the view adopted by the CIPC. I think it has caused a bit of confusion in the market. But to me, reading that technical definition of beneficial owner, I don't see the justification for saying that anyone who has 5% or more is a beneficial owner. It's just not textually supported in the legislation. You know, as I say, in other jurisdictions, they do set thresholds of maybe 20, 25%. And as I've mentioned in another context, we now have a 5% threshold in terms of FICA, not in the statute itself, but in terms of sort of a guidance booklet that has been released by the Financial Intelligence Center.
So that leads me to the next question. If we don't have a controlling natural person shareholder within the common law meaning of the term, does that mean that a company could have no beneficial owner?
Yes, I think in a lot of cases that is. And we're seeing that a lot with clients that are asking for an analysis of who their beneficial owner is. And you see this time and time again, because of deficiencies or loopholes in that definition of beneficial owner, you very often arrive at the answer that there just isn't a beneficial owner. There isn't a natural person who controls this company. And I've alluded to this previously. I think one of the big loopholes there is absence of aggregation principle, at least an express one. I don't know if one can read it in or imply that you've got to aggregate interests with related persons, etc. And so it's very common to find that there isn't one individual, a natural person that control the company, but they can normally maybe do so with family members or business associates or persons that they act in concert with on a regular basis. But yes, to answer the question quite crisply, in many instances, actually, you find there just simply isn't a beneficial owner of a company.
And do you think the legislature actually intended this consequence? I mean, do you think they foresaw that there would actually be an easy way to get around disclosing who ultimately sits behind a company?
Well, I think it's pretty much not intentional at all. I think it was, with respect, it may have been a bit of a rush job putting through this definition of beneficial owner into the Companies Act and into other pieces of legislation. And those other pieces of legislation, like, the, as I alluded to, FICA and the Trust Property Control Act and the Nonprofit Organizations Act, they have their own definitions of beneficial owner, which are in some respects similar to the Companies Act definition, but in many respects, they have material differences. So I wonder if they thought through all of these difficulties and loopholes, but that's the definition that we are sitting with. And it's not clear whether it was intentional that FICA should have a different definition to the Companies Act, although one can understand that FICA, you know, deals with accountable institutions. That's your key piece of anti-money laundering legislation. And one can understand why FICA, for instance, should have a wider and much more intensive definition of who is a beneficial owner of a client. And also the other issue, the Companies Act beneficial owner regime, is they didn't provide a mechanism for the company to actually find out who is the beneficial owner, because one must appreciate the company's board will not necessarily have this information. So they have to reach out to the shareholders and get this information as to who is the beneficial owner. But there actually isn't a statutory mechanism for the board to compel them and to compel shareholders and shareholders of shareholders to disclose who the beneficial owner is. So I do think there are some unintended consequences here. We will have to see how this plays out over months and years. And I think it will be discovered in due course that there are problems here with the definition, and one can see amendments having to be made.
Yeah, so just to explain to everyone how it works practically, if there is no beneficial owner, there is in fact an option on CRPC system to state that the company is a non-affected company with no beneficial ownership to declare. And the system will then direct you to just file the company's securities register. But just to ask the kind of million-dollar question when it comes to beneficial ownership disclosure, what if there is a trust in the control structure? So if a trust, for instance, holds 51% of the shares in a company or is even 100% shareholder in the company, we see that often. So we know that the Trust Property Control Act, you know, has its own definition of a beneficial owner and has deeming provisions which provide that a trustee and a beneficiary would be a beneficial owner. I'm interested to hear, how does that interplay with the Companies Act and the CIPC filing regime?
Yeah, so very important to bear in mind that, yes, the Trust Property Control Act has its own definition, and that's relevant for purposes of the Trust Property Control Act, for purposes of filings that those trustees have to do with the Master of the High Court. Okay, so there's no interlinking or cross-reference or interplay actually legislatively between the Companies Act and the Trust Property Control Act. Very important, because when you look at the Trust Property Control Act and its definition of who is a beneficial owner of a trust, they have certain deeming provisions that bring certain persons within the ambit. So the founder of a trust is deemed to be the beneficial owner. Every named beneficiary in the trust deed is deemed to be the beneficial owner. And these are persons who would normally not have any control whatsoever over the trust. It's actually the trustees who have that control. So one mustn't get confused around that point. So that's the first area to understand. And yes, sometimes with a company, so you trace the ownership chain upwards, you end up with a trust. Now, what does this trust look like? Typically, there would be three trustees, mom, dad, and an independent accountant or lawyer. So it's normally three trustees, and that trust deed says that decisions are taken by a majority vote of the trustees. And so actually, neither one of those trustees has outright control, because all decisions have to be taken by majority. And I wouldn't say the beneficiary of the trust is typically a beneficial owner, or at least a candidate for that, because they only have an economic interest, or sort of a space, which is sort of a contingent interest in the economics of the trust, but they don't have a say over the management of the trust. You could look at whether the trust deed refers to a person that can change the constitution of the board of trustees, add or remove trustees in their discretion. They would definitely be a candidate for being a beneficial owner. But normally you look at the trust deed and there isn't someone like that. You just have this board of trustees that controls the trust. Now, sometimes there's a temptation to maybe identify one of the trustees who is the so-called dominant trustee who sort of runs the show de facto on a day-to-day basis and identify them as the beneficial owner, which, you know, you must be careful about, because there are certain estate planning and tax considerations that go into that. You might be making a certain representation for the purposes of one area of law and now holding yourself out to be the controller of the trust for purposes of the Companies Act. So there are sensitivities around that. So it is unfortunately a bit of a minefield when it comes to trusts. You're just going to have to look at that trust deed on a case-by-case basis and ascertain, is there actually someone who meets this technical definition of a beneficial owner of the underlying company?
And what about directors? I mean, there's a widely held view that, you know, directors exercise effective control of a company and therefore they are beneficial owners. What do you make of that?
Yeah, so that's sometimes looked at as sort of a fallback provision. People can't find someone that is a proprietary controller or an equity controller, someone like a majoritarian shareholder, a majoritarian partner. And so sometimes the question is asked, okay, well, what about the board of directors of the controlling shareholder company or the CEO? Isn't there a fallback provision that perhaps they are deemed to be the beneficial owners? And you do see something like that in FICA, but not in the Companies Act. And I'm not sure that, you know, the directors of a company can be regarded as the beneficial owners. They certainly have administrative control on a day-to-day basis, and they have executive control, but ultimately they serve at the behest of shareholders. And I think those are the actual controllers. If I asked you today, okay, who controls, let's take a very large company, for instance, who controls Apple or Amazon? you would go and look at the share register to see, well, you know, who's actually the major shareholder there? Is it Jeff Bezos or is it any of the institutional shareholders? You wouldn't say it's the CEO, Tim Cook, for instance, of Apple. He has executive control on a day-to-day basis, but I don't believe you can say that he's the beneficial owner.
I'm sure Tim Cook would be happy to hear that. So what are the consequences if a company makes a beneficial ownership filing which CIPC considers is incorrect or it's not in compliance with what CIPC's interpretation of the beneficial ownership definition is?
Yeah, well, so they would have to follow the ordinary procedures of investigating a non-contravention of the Companies Act. They would have to launch an investigation. They have those powers, investigative powers. It's from Section 169 onwards of the Companies Act. They can investigate breaches of the Companies Act. You would be allowed to make representations and the like to the CIPC in that regard and explain to them the position as to why you arrived at the conclusion that this person is the beneficial owner or that there is no beneficial owner of the company. And ultimately, they would have to find, if there is a breach, then they would have to issue a compliance notice to the company to rectify the breach. And if you're unhappy with that decision, then you go to the company's tribunal. So there's quite a few steps and there's a process that has to be followed by CIPC and there's ad alteram partem involved in that. However, one would see that recent communications from the CIPC, you know, what they're saying there is that anyone who is in, you know, non-compliance of these beneficial owner provisions, they will actually now block the filing of the annual returns. And that can actually ultimately lead to the deregistration of the company. Now, questions arise around whether they're actually empowered to do that, etc. I don't want to go into that for present purposes, but one sees that practically, that is a serious concern for a company if they could be, you know, unilaterally through an action of CIPC, have their annual returns blocked and ultimately be deregistered. So that's going to inform the type of approach or attitude of companies to filing their beneficial owner returns.
I think, you know, if a company interprets the definition of beneficial ownership differently to CIPC, I think at the end of the day, they wouldn't want to land up in court or in a company's tribunal over this issue. So they might want to take the path of least resistance and kind of just over-disclose. And I guess the question then is there any risk in over-disclosure?
Yeah, so we see that approach a lot in practice, that applying a very technical interpretation of the definition of beneficial owner, you do the analysis and you find that legalistically there isn't actually a beneficial owner. But then you bear in mind, you know, CIPC has this approach of the 5% and now they've sent these communiques around the deregistration of the company. And so that rejigs the thinking of a lot of the companies. So I think they will just follow the path of least resistance. Just disclose someone as being the beneficial owner anyway, even though they might not technically meet the definition. And generally, that isn't actually problematic. You can over-disclose. I would just note POPI concerns, the Protection of Personal Information Act. In terms of that legislation, we know that you can disclose the personal information of somebody, either with their consent or if required to do otherwise in terms of another piece of legislation. Now, if you are going to over-disclose, i.e. disclose someone that doesn't actually technically meet the definition, one questions whether that is really a disclosure in terms of a piece of legislation. And so, you know, you should rather then get that person's consent. And we find in most instances, it's not really problematic to have that person being disclosed as a beneficial owner. So I think just bear that in mind, but otherwise it's not problematic at all.
Well, thank you, Yaniv. I think we could talk about this forever, but that's all we have time for today. So we really hope this was helpful for everyone. And please feel free to reach out to us if you have any questions about beneficial ownership, and we'll be happy to help you. Thanks.
Thanks, Rox.
The views and information expressed are those of the contributors at the time of publication and do not necessarily present those of the firm. All content is provided for general purposes only and does not constitute legal advice. We make no representations, warranties, or guarantees, whether expressed or implied, that the content on our podcast is accurate, complete, up-to-date, or reflects the current law. We accept no responsibility for any loss or damage, whether direct or consequential, arising from reliance on the information which is presented here.